And we've got Linda Moltenhauer, investigative reporter. She's in the United Kingdom with a series of live reports with witnesses talking about some incredible crop formations and craft that they have seen. So she'll be back in just a moment. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. We've got Linda Moltenhauer, and let's go back to her in the United Kingdom. There you are. Set the scene for us, by the way. Linda, where are you now?
I am sitting at a window that is looking out on one of those magical English gardens in which it looks like there are 1,000 different plants. Pink flowers that look like orchids are growing up. You can see bees and bumblebees. And it reminds me of being a kid and reading English novels in which there are always gardens with gates that you would go through, like into a secret garden. And that's exactly what this yard is like at Charles Mallett's house. We're in Yatesbury, which is very close to Colne and Churhill, and up the road is Avebury and Silbury Hill. So I'm right in the heart of what has been known as Crop Formation Central and the Vale of Pewsey. And I'm going to start this morning with my own first, I thought, joyful and wonderful introduction into England upon landing at Heathrow. And then, and in a few minutes, I'm going to have firsthand eyewitness from a cameraman who was the first to go into that amazing, what some people call Quetzalcoatl headdress,
yep,
across the road from Silbury Hill. So you're now into the world of two people, myself and cameraman Ryan O'Hara,
mm-hmm,
who he was there. I'm now arriving at Heathrow, and it was raining. I get into my rental car, and it is raining.
You mean you're driving yourself around out there?
Oh, I always have, yeah.
I didn't know that.
You switch over to the wrong side of the road and the wrong side of the car, but I actually find it kind of fun.
Good for you. I enjoy it.
And I'm heading down the M4, and I go to my dear friend's place on the Kennet Canal where they have a boat, and I stayed there for a couple of nights before moving to Charles. And I learned from Charles Mallett that that Friday morning, my flight landed midday, that morning that the amazing 12-armed Ogbourne St. George pattern was reported, also near Barbary Castle. So Jill Nicholas, my dear friend, and I headed off. And I have been with people struggling to find formations in the past. I have never encountered anything like this one. We found so many people, do you know where this new formation is? And no one could figure it out, could not find it. And eventually, some people from Norway came and said, follow us. And we went running, literally running after the Norwegians. And it was a 2-mile trek just to get to a point on a ridgeway where we could see this incredible 12-armed beaded with what appear to be Mayan symbols out in the wheat, still far away. We've walked 2 miles. And where we get to the point where we can finally see this formation for the first time, where are we? We are at the top of a very steep sheep pasture. There are 100 or more sheep in front of us. And as we start down that hill, the sheep start moving. But we had to go a long way to get down to the bottom of the hill. Now we're at the edge of the wheat field. You have to go several hundred more feet in the wheat before you can get to this pattern that I estimate is probably 200 feet in diameter with the 12 arms around a center. And this morning I wanted to share some of the first discoveries that make this pattern not only a unique pattern in the history of patterns in crop formations, 12 arms with what appear to be clearly Mayan symbols, but as I walked in and you're looking at the surface lay, and you start looking for breaks or cracks or anything that seems artificial, I began to realize that if I lifted up the surface wheat, that, George, I would be looking at a 90-degree perfect, neat. We're not talking about something haphazard. We're talking about something that is almost woven tightly vertically, like we just talked about the weave in the basket in Eastfield. This is vertical. I began getting down on my hands and knees and trying to find out how many 90-degree crosshatches and finding 45-degree neatly laid layers amid the 90 degrees. And I was finding many 5 layers deep, some 7 layers deep. And one woman said that she counted 12 layers of crisscrossing layers below the surface that you could walk on and never realize what was underneath. This is a remarkable construction, and when you realize that there are 48 small circles, and every single circle in that pattern appeared to be completely different. Imagine something constructing 48 small circles when you look at that pattern
in
the air.
And over what kind of period of time do you think this thing just formed?
Well, from the biophysical work of W.C. Levengood. I remember working with him in 1994, and even on the basis of what he was finding under the microscope that far back, he told me one day, he said, Linda, I am convinced that we are dealing with a phenomenon that can act in seconds. And he wasn't kidding, and here's the reason why. If you have, like in Ogburn, St. George, if you have parts of formations that are raised up above others, say 7 layers, and you've got inches between one flatter part of the floor, lower part of the floor, I'm talking about the lay, the floor, and you've got other parts that are coming up because they've literally been constructed some way, if you are dealing with what he thinks is a spinning plasma vortex that has microwave energy and electrical energy, and it interacts with the plants, leaving some collapsing in patterns and some standing, defining those patterns. That energy interacting equally should leave carbon residue on the surface where the plants are up higher in these thick weaves because the energy would interact with them, the hypothesis is, more intensely. We have never found carbon black as a residue like of cooking or heating the plants. And that says to W.C. Levengood that for the size of these formations, for the complexity and the change in depths, the fact that we don't find carbon black is significant and means rapidity of formation. And Lucy Pringle, who will be with us in the last half hour to talk about physical impacts on humans and animals, she has made that point as well, that she has concluded that the formations are happening rapidly. Remember, Winston Keach, at 1:44 a.m., there is nothing in the east field. He thinks at 1:45 a.m., the first line appeared. That's quite rapid.
It's very rapid.
And now I want to move from my experience in Ogburn, of which I have put up a very long report with a lot of my images at earthfiles.com so people can see through my eyes some of the structural anomalies and the amazing circles and the corridors and the fact that Ogburn, St. George, was not even laid along the easy tram lines. It was rotated from the tram lines almost in what appeared to have been a north-south-east-west orientation when those 12 arms were put down. Probably, if not the most amazing formation in wheat in this 2009 summer. It is certainly up there as one of the top one, two, or three, and that is what we're calling the Quetzalcoatl headdress that was on the hill across the road from Silbury Hill. For those listening who have been to Silbury Hill, they know that when you're at the top, it's 130 feet above the ground. The largest man-made hill in Europe that is old and at least 5,000 years old.
Jeez, yeah.
Well, you think of the field across the road as being flat. It's not. That is a hill crop that rises up almost to the same altitude of Silbury Hill. And why is this significant? It means that whatever happened about this headdress, it happened on top of a hill that was opposite Silbury Hill's crest. And who was up there from 3 a.m. on? Cameraman Ryan O'Hara with a documentary crew has his camera, is looking all around. They knew there was nothing in that vicinity in the day before. And I'm going to now bring in the first eyes, first camera lens, who walked into this amazing, huge, complicated headdress, and that his first sighting of it and how it all began is his story here to tell on Coast. Here now is Ryan O'Hara about how it began and what happened.
Hi, yes. Well, as you just read, that my production team was staked out on top of Silbury Hill the night that the formation, well, the morning the formation was found. And, well, my producer had the idea to check out Silbury Hill. We have been staking out different locations for the last couple weeks. We've been here for about 6 weeks now, and about 3 nights a week, we will go out and kind of sit on top of a hill in the early morning. We'll wait for the sun to come up and see if we can either catch any natural formations or people finishing their work. So we had a hunch. My producer had a hunch to go to Silbury Hill that night, and so we split up. Two people went to the West Kennet Longborough, the tomb that was there, did a yin-yang, and then two of us went to top of Silbury. And, well, we sat up there for a good hour and so, and then as the morning light kind of started to fill the sky, we were able to see further into the distance, and that is when I spotted with the camera and with my own eyes a small, very obscured pattern in the distance. And since the hill is so high across the street from Silbury, the circle was not easily identifiable. It was more at a slant, even with your eyes. So it was a very, prolonged, disc. And so I radioed in across to my producer that we had found a new circle. And we waited for about half an hour, kind of waited around and to see if there's any activity anywhere. And when it was all calm and a little bit lighter, we decided to go inside the circle.
Now, Charles Mallett was impressed with how dew-laden everything was that morning.
Mm-hmm.
Can you give us the very first, you're walking up to this for the very first time with your camera. Explain what you're seeing and talk about the lay and the complexity.
Right. Well, it's actually quite a good hike because I had to come down the hill across the street and go right up the same amount of distance. But, when we first got into the circle, we kind of stayed on the outside. We found a nice tram line that led up to it finally, and we stood outside and we kind of just examined it for a while. We were giving ourselves a lot of time before we actually stepped into it, because we knew once we stepped into it, then we would start leaving evidence of our being there. And so it was very exciting. And when we got to the top, that's when you could tell how big and complex it was. Like I said, from Silbury, it was very hard to tell because it's almost in the same eye line. So it was very foreshortened. Where here, we were actually, you could see further being right upon it. And it was quite complex, and there was a lot of morning dew.
Well, you guys have been going around as a documentary crew into patterns. Can you give details now about what struck you? Was it? How different was it in terms of its pristineness and freshness to other formations you've been in?
Yes, it's customary that we will get into every formation that's reported the day of. We're not the first ones in, but we're pretty early. Now, this one was comparably, it was obviously much more pristine. After walking around it, the crop was very fresh. It was crunching. You know, we were actually stomping it to the ground. So we were doing the damage to the crop. It was very, very pristine. And there's only one spot in the entire thing that I would even take a question at if it was part of the design. But other than that, everything seemed to be pretty perfect. And what was really, I guess, impressive is that the design isn't just circles and things like that, where it actually has a very complex array of different geometric shapes, which makes it very, very complicated if it were to be done by man.
At the top of the headdress, everybody has talked about what appears to be facets. Some people have said maybe there are mountains. There's been all kinds of. Do you remember specifically getting to that very faceted area? No one's ever seen anything quite like that. And what did it look like close up on the ground?
Yeah, I think you're referencing near the top, which is actually the part that was closest to the road, from what I could see on top of Silbury, where it's pretty much wide open and has kind of like a pattern in the lay. Is that right? Yeah, well, obviously it looked very nicely done. At the time, we had not seen an aerial, so we weren't quite sure what we were standing in. But we could tell that on the ground, we could tell that there was a different pattern in the lay, and it wasn't until later that we saw that it looked more part of a design and less part of the construct, I guess.
And is it fair to say that when the sun went down the day before on July 4th, there was nothing on top of that hill that anybody had reported? Airplanes fly over there, people are going by looking. So that here is an instance where you were there on Silbury at 3 a.m. If there had been lights over on that hill, you probably would have noticed something.
Yeah, that's very true. It seems that there are so many people who fly around here, especially a giant tourist area like Silbury, where people climb it every day during the day. And people seem to report crop circles pretty fast around here, and there was absolutely no record of that being there the night before, nor did we know that there is going to be anything there. We just dumb luck, I guess. But yes, I can tell you that. But the amazing thing that Arc Stakeout does, although we did not see any humans or extra phenomenal activity, what we did do is manage to make a nice time scale that we were there from 3 and we saw nothing, no lights. We witnessed every car go by, none of them stopped, things like that. So what our production did do is really make a fantastic time slot that makes it very improbable to be done by man, or must have been a very talented team that with phenomenal that skills, because 3 in the morning, no activity.
And that the complexity and size of that formation is something that would have taken a great deal of time if anybody could have done it. And what we are underscoring in this COAST program is that we are dealing with phenomena, and we are dealing with pristineness in which there has been so much rain and so much mud, and yet Ogborne, the new formations this morning, I just saw fresh images, there's no mud. And that morning, how clean would you say? What are you looking at in terms of cleanliness?
Yeah, we've been in a couple of formations the day of, and we've seen lots of mud work, and we've been very, distraught about that. But in this one, we definitely took very much care to examine when we first got in it to see if there were any signs of things like that. And there's absolutely, to my knowledge, no mud on top of the plants. It was all very fresh.
So, George, we're talking about, as everybody who has looked at that amazing Quetzalcoatl headdress, the complexity of it is enormous. There are features in there that we have not seen in other formations. Just like that tight, tight weave in the east field. Whatever is happening, it appears to be working with crops in ways that no one in a human way has ever been able to demonstrate.
What do you got in store for us next half hour,
Linda? Next in the half hour is Lucy Pringle, incredible aerial photographer and researcher in crop formations, with what happens to people in these patterns.
Good point. Well, how would you like to go back into the archives for a full year and download programs? You can if you're a member of StreamLink for just pennies a day by going to coasttocoastam.com. Linda, isn't this incredible how it is all gearing up toward 2012? These symbols, they're everywhere, huh?
George, are you live now?
No, I passed on a few weeks ago.
Well, there was some strange dropout. It might have been in the signal. I know we're now back into this half hour. Would you ask what you just asked again?
Sure. I was saying, isn't it strange how this is all gearing itself towards 2012?
Well, if you go back to the end of the, in the 70s and the 80s, there were crop formations, but they were nothing like what's called the modern age since probably 90. And that, so we're talking about a long run-up. If the crop formations have anything directly linked to 2012 as some sort of historic demarcation line that may simply be the end of a calendar that may have relevance to the Earth now or may not. None of us really know. My own personal opinion is that the crop formations are providing something out there with information, but to what end? That's what we would all like to know. And I have fresh report right now from Andrew Perka, who has run back from the Waden Hill brand new formation this morning, seen on the way to Dew Coast. Here is Andrew again.
Yes, hi, George.
Welcome back, Andrew.
We got there. We did manage to get some grand shots of the new formation, but literally about 15 minutes or so later, the farmer turned up and started cutting a whole formation out. It's really sad, but well, there you go. What can you do? It's, sure. It's the farmer's land. It's his property, and I suppose he can do what he wants. But
What did you say?
Well, basically, the actual formation itself was a kind of a round circle with two circles inside at the same time, and almost like a big teardrops going into the center of the two circles. It was quite an interesting one. But again, it was very difficult to actually give a full assumption from ground level. So we hope we can sort of reconstruct it from the photographs we have. So basically, it's kind of a exciting morning, but sad morning at the same time.
Well, I have a question. Since it rained so hard yesterday, and it's been mud, there was mud out in front, you've got it on your pants. What you were able to see of the crop before the farmer came and cut it out, can you give a description about whether you saw mud, anything? How pristine was it?
Now, the formation itself was absolutely pristine. What I used to sort of describe when you actually walk on freshly flattened corn, it has that crispiness to it. And there was no mud deposits whatsoever. It was just beautifully laid. You could just see the actual wheat was still slightly rising. So that's a good indication that it's not been flattened by anybody. But it's no mud deposit at all, considering the weather conditions.
And they're going to head off, I think, to the Hackman Hill. And I'll be doing reports at earthfiles.com about these brand new formations and whatever else is going to be turning up. I will continue to try to keep filing reports. But there is another very important aspect to crop formations. And there is one woman in England who has probably done more work than anybody else when it comes to the impacts of some kind of energy that is residual in the formations on people and sometimes even animals. I've known Lucy Pringle for a long time. She is based in Hampshire County, England, and she has been photographing crop formations from the air and on the ground since 1993, and her aerial images are some of the best in the world. And you can see her work at her website, www.lucypringle.co.uk. She has also produced valuable and beautiful books about her crop formation research. I have them all. Crop Circles, Art in the Landscape was released in 2007 after her two previous books, Crop Circles in 2004, and Crop Circles, The Greatest Mystery of Modern Times in 1999. She has been one of the few people to investigate reports of both good and bad physical effects on people in crop formations, as well as the disturbed behavior of dogs in and around crop formations. One possible background context leading up to Lucy's own comments is that biophysicist W.C. Lovingood in the United States hypothesized back in the mid-1990s from his studies of biophysical and biochemical changes in crop formations, not only the plants but the soils, that a spinning plasma vortex containing microwave and electrical energies is what interacts with the cereal crops of the world to create these remarkable patterns. Spinning plasmas could also affect the magnetic fields in crop formations, maybe even for a day or two or three. And that might explain, he has said, the range of physical effects noticed by people and in animals. And I'm going to ask Lucy to share with the Coast audience now what were either the single case or the cases that first attracted your own attention that something is interacting with people and even animals. And here now is Lucy Pringle.
Great.
Hello, George.
Hi, Lucy. Good.
I suppose my very first experience was something that happened to me. And this was a long time ago in 1990. And I'd been playing quite a vicious game of mixed doubles tennis. And I'd been standing at the net, and somebody's hit a very hard ball at me. And that damaged my shoulders to such an extent that that evening I couldn't even lift my arm in order to clean my teeth. And this was a great worry to me because I was going to have my very, very first flight over the circles the following day, and I wasn't certain that I'd be able to drive down. Anyhow, I got a gear shift car, and so my good hand was able to shift the gears, and I just steered very gently with my right arm. And we got in the air and flew over these amazing formations in 1990, which was the year of the first pictograms, the enormous, great linear pictograms. And, of course, you know, flying over the fields, it's a remarkable experience. Mm-hmm. And you forget all your ills and your woes and anything like that. And it wasn't until I was driving back that I realized I was in quite a lot of trouble. So we stopped at a formation at Morstead. And we went in, and I used my pendulum to douse for the place where there was the strongest energy. And I sat down. And suddenly a most extraordinary rippling sensation went right through one shoulder to the other. And I thought, well, you know, this is strange. What could be happening? And I fiddled with my arm, my damaged arm, and it was totally cured, totally healed. And so I called for a friend of mine who was with me, and she had an illness called systemic scleroderma, which is it's a chronic illness. And I said to her, come and sit here. I didn't tell her what had happened to me, but I just said, come and sit here. This is a good spot. So she sat down, and the moment she sat down, she said, oh, my goodness, I feel wonderful. I'd love to stay here forever. Well, I had to douse and measure up and things, so I went away, came back about 20 minutes later, and there she was lying flat on her back. And she said, look at me. And I said, yes, well, so what? And she said, Lucy, don't you realize I have not been able to lie flat on my back for 15 years?
My God.
Due to this illness, she has to prop herself up in bed. So this was just one of the instances. On my database, I've got over 700 reports. I think it's the largest database in the world. And I was trying to select one or two for you today. And to try and rustle through the 700 is amazing. But I have got one or two examples.
Okay. And are those ley line areas, Lucy, do you know?
Yes. I mean, they all genuine crop circles seem to be on energy lines, ley lines.
Okay.
And I think this is part of the whole phenomenon. Just as 98.3% are all on chalkland. And indeed, in the States, you have about the same percentage on limestone, which has the same properties as chalk, because, you know, it's porous and the aquifers underneath. And we seem to think that the descending electrical force in some way interacts with the electromagnetic fields emitted by the energy lines and the aquifers underneath the ground. An awful lot is going on underneath the ground, which we can't see and we don't really understand.
Okay. Linda?
Linda. Yeah, George.
There you go.
Yes. And what we are now going to do is Lucy's going to go into a couple of cases. And before she does, I just wanted to share personally that I had an experience in it was a remarkable pattern back in 1992, 1993 time period. And there were only four of us that the farmer gave permission, specific permission, to go in and sample. All four of us entered the field at exactly the same time. Two were male, two female. We were all doing various chores over 4 to 5 hours because we were in with the farmer's permission and we did a lot of work. And suddenly, at about 4 hours into that formation, all of us at exactly the same time said, oh, my head hurts so badly that I feel like I have to sit down. And we all began realizing that something was happening that we didn't understand, but that we all had these symptoms. Now, are those headaches that people have experienced in crop formations, is it related to magnetic field disturbance? This is probably one, Lucy, of the most common symptoms, sure. And I'm now going to turn to you of what I've just said about headaches.
Yes, headaches is a very common symptom. In my research, I've had a list of the various effects like cranial headaches and ocular vision changes, hallucinations, etc. And I have to say that over 70% actually are negative reports. But that isn't surprising because when people go into a formation, they expect to feel well. And so they don't necessarily report that feeling of well-being unless it's quite outstanding. But they will report to me if they don't feel well. But I got a strange report. This was an ocular effect. A man was going into a formation at Alton Barnes. And as he neared the formation, his vision split into two. One going one way, the other horizontally. One going one way, the other going the other way. But he was clear in the middle. And that was really quite scary. I mean, the vision was totally clear in the middle. He doesn't wear spectacles, and normally he has normal vision. And he didn't see any change in the colors, and it hasn't happened to him since. But then there was another example of somebody who went into another formation, and it was quite scary in a way because she suddenly saw everything in black and white. The color had completely gone, and this lasted for 30 seconds. And when something like that happens, 30 seconds is a long time. And, there are so many reports, George, the reports of people feeling ill when they look at formations, and a lot of them are shaped like mandalas, and mandalas give off certain frequencies, and even people watching slideshows, they can feel quite ill. There was one occasion in the States when I was giving a talk, and a girl came up to me, and she was in quite a bad mood, and she said to me, Lucy, you're late starting. Well, I wasn't really, but I said, well, you know, I hope you get everything you want from this talk. And afterwards, she came up to me, and she was an entirely changed person. And she said, oh, I'm so sorry, I was so rude to you, but she said, I've had a terrible pain in my knee for years. And she said, it just was so extraordinary, because in the middle of your talk, I suddenly realized the pain had gone. Well, unfortunately, I haven't been able to follow that up. So I don't know whether that was permanent. But there seems to be, what we're dealing with basically is frequencies.
Sure.
And even animals, animals get affected. Usually, funnily enough, it's usually cats. And a friend of mine called Doreen Jenkins, she went into a formation and she brought some wheat home, and she put it in the loo in the lavatory, and her cat went to it and he guarded it. And this is a normally docile, sweet cat. And the moment she went up to it and tried to touch the wheat, it growled and it snarled at her. And it did this for about 3 days. She couldn't get near it. And she said she didn't know, but maybe she thought the cat could see what was happening in her own aura and maybe was protecting her from it. It was most extraordinary. Hold on, I'll get back to Linda.
Okay.
One of the things that Lucy just said, frequencies, and we know also that batteries in cameras have notoriously failed inside some crop formations now for 20-some years. All of this adding up to in the unseen, in the frequency world, and in what biophysicist W.C. Levengood has talked about, spinning plasmas that could affect magnetic fields, that this seems to be a huge part of what crop formations are doing in the environment, with the answer why still unanswered. But I would like now to ask Lucy a question that has been bothering me ever since I was getting ready to leave Albuquerque, and I begin receiving all of these internet messages, and one of them had very large letters that began with 100%, 100% of all 2009 English crop formations are man-made. And I looked at that thinking of either the ignorance behind it or the deliberate misinformation in order to manipulate the public and the media's mind for some reason that is not understood. And Lucy has been living amid this phenomena and studying it and going into the field for a very long time in England. And I would like Lucy to comment on these internet so-called headlines of 100% man-made.
Yes, George. It's very frustrating because I've been doing research now in the fields for about 20 years.
That's a long time.
Bottles of water, and they are tested all over the world using different techniques, and they show up extraordinary anomalies. And in one particular formation, I took seeds from inside and outside. They were measured for protein levels, and it showed up a 40% higher protein level in the ones taken inside. They were measured blind. So when people say, come up with these extraordinary figures of 80% are man-made and 20% aren't, I get quite hot under the collar. Because my belief is, taking it from a scientific point of view, in order to make a statement like that, you've either got to have been into every single one of the crop circles yourself, or you've got to be there when they appeared, or you've got to conducted scientific tests in every single one of them, or you have got to know for a fact that maybe the National Geographic or Mitsubishi or somebody has actually commissioned a particular formation. And there is not one single person on Earth who can fit that criteria. So it's a totally, totally unscientific statement, and it doesn't do the phenomenon any good, nor does it do the people any good who come out with these statements.
Okay.
And I couldn't reinforce that more, George, and to realize that we are at a time where these modern formations have been occurring for at least 20-some years, and that what we have gone through in these 2 hours today on the radio program separates out in infrared anomalies, separates out timelines in which a formation could not have been made, that there is a true phenomenon here, and maybe there is someone or political entities that for some reason want to manipulate the public and the media mind to ignore what it seems to be a major phenomenon. But I am trying in my own way to report the facts, and the facts speak for themselves. Everything from the infrared to the biophysical and biochemical studies, Lucy's important work, and that we are dealing with energy systems and frequencies that are involved and leave residues. And what we would all like to know is exactly why. But you don't ignore something because you don't understand it.
Are you ready for conversations with Linda?
I am.
We will do that when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM.